Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Rock and roll, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays.
And it is Sunday, September 19th, 2004, 8:47 p.m. on the clock on the wall on the big Jove Enterprises studios. Oh, how's everybody doing tonight? It is the end of what has been a really, really crappy week, and it really didn't start out that way. It started out pretty good. I was working my usual position and doing my job, and it was near the end of the day when I got called in to see my supervisor, who came up and said, Joe, I want to talk to you. And he had another supervisor there, and I guess they wanted a witness. I don't know. It really, you know, it really disturbs me to be called in by the supervisor, because quite frankly, I would prefer it if I never have to deal with the supervisor at all. I mean, that's just me. I don't like having to deal with somebody if I don't like dealing with somebody if I don't have to deal with somebody. And I'm sure you're the same way. Everybody gets nervous when they talk to the boss. I know that compared to most people, I'm more protected against getting fired than others. But I have had situations where someone calls me in at the end of the day. And at the end of the day is when you know you're in trouble. And in fact, the previous to last time I've gotten fired, that was at the end of the day, basically, was when they called me in saying, we're letting you go. See ya. They don't do that at the beginning. There's no point. They get the last day's work out of you. Anyway, they called me in, and he brought up a matter that had been brought up to him by some of the other people I work with, that, and I'm not going to say exactly what it was, but let's just say it was pretty petty. It was not anything that anyone could have just ignored. You know what I mean? They could have just ignored what was going on because it really didn't affect them. It wasn't something I was talking to anybody about. But they brought it up, and I was furious. And I'm sure you would probably be furious, too. And I'm like, I cannot believe, with all the stuff that I have to put up with on a daily basis, the incompetence, the stupidity, the immaturity, the childishness of all the things that I just put up with on a regular basis, because you just assume that, you know, that's the way people are. I mean, the truth of the matter is, with a few rare exceptions, I work with a bunch of people who are pretty stupid, childish, immature, and incompetent in some respects, and who are just more interested in their little social get-together than just going there and doing their fucking job, which is what they're supposed to be there to do. They're there to build electrical boxes. It's not a social club, although some people can't seem to understand that. And what was disturbing them was something that disturbed them on a social level, not on a working level. And I said, look, there's all sorts of things that go on that offend me. because that was the word he used, that they were offended. There's all sorts of things that go on during the work that just simply offend me. But it's not something I go running to the supervisor about. Anybody who's worked in any place long enough to know, especially if you work in a big plant like I do, that the last thing you want to do is get the supervisor involved in something. You know, you take if something's bothering somebody, you take them aside and you talk to them first. So after that, after that meeting, I was in a pretty lousy mood, and I went out and did for the rest of the damn day, you know, what I was doing, and I was in a pretty sour mood for the rest of the week, and I took Thursday off because my wife was not feeling well, and it's actually a good thing that I took Thursday off because we lost power. I might have attempted to make a new show. I don't know if I would have or not. I had kind of sort of made the decision not to, but there was still a chance that I could change my mind, and the power went off. We lost power for like 15 hours. It went off at 6:30 Sunday evening, and it went back on again Friday morning, at 9:30. Is that right? Yeah, about 9:30. So we were out of power, but I had decided to stay home anyway to take care of my wife, who was still very sick. She's sleeping right now, and she sleeps so that I can't really wake her up even talking like this. She'll wake up by a sudden sound, but not a long, drawn-out conversation like this. And, you know, I was just in a bad mood the whole week. And Friday, you know, there were some things that were going on that were upsetting me. So I thought about it, because I really wasn't going to. But he had encouraged me to speak up, because he seemed genuinely concerned about how things were going on at work for me. He gave the appearance that he was concerned, and he wanted me to speak up so he can solve some problems. So I go to him and I talk to him about stuff, and he calls in some other people and talks to other things, and all of a sudden it turns out to be a referendum on me. You know, and it just I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting there listening to this stuff, and I absolutely could not believe how this was getting turned around. And this is a guy who encouraged me to speak up. And that's what really gets to me. Because when I brought up all the other stuff at the first meeting that we had on Monday, he said, well, this is just not the time and the place for that. You know, I'm here to talk about this specific issue. And so I figured, you know, I'd come back and talk to him. You know, and the crux of the matter is, the reason why I got in trouble is because I didn't tell him everything. You know, there's some other stuff going on. And again, I'm not the type of person who goes running to the supervisor. It goes against everything I believe in the workplace, where the work and people know that the supervisors are, if not necessarily the enemy, are not people you want to get involved in situations. You want to try to handle these things among yourselves. I do not handle childish and immaturity very well. Childishness and immaturity very well. I do not handle them well. In fact, you might say I handle them rather childishly and immaturely. I've just never been able to do that. Ever since I was a little kid, I've always been, you know, picked on or the victim of stuff like that. And in almost every single occasion, when I have gone to the so-called authorities for a little help, I've been turned down or basically made to believe that it was all my fault for what was going on. You know, so I've lived a life where I'm constantly worried that, you know, somebody's going to do something to me and I'm not going to be able to fight back. Maybe some of you understand what I'm talking about. Maybe others of you just simply say, well, you should, you know, fight back more. Every time I fought back, I got in trouble for fighting back. And then I have people tell me that I should fight back when I do fight back, it comes back to hurt me. And this was just another situation like that. I'm sure you all know people at work who have this kind of problem. I guess they just don't fit in like I don't. And I'm the first to admit, as strange as it is that I do a radio show for working people, that I so little identify with them that I'm always, and especially the type of work that I do. And I'm going to be blunt. You know, my life may be a mass of wasted potential. But the truth of the matter is, at least I still have potential. There is still a chance, however slim, there is still a chance that I might actually break out of this whole 9-to-5 thing. If somebody gives me a radio gig, or if something else happens, my writing skills or something, gets me a position where I can do the things that I like to do. you know, whether it be a talk show or a radio DJ deal, which is something I'm trying to do, put together an audio show that I can syndicate out, you know, to different stations so that they can play it. You know, something like that, you know. Someday that's going to happen for me, maybe. And if that ever happens, I won't have to worry about that sort of 9-to-5. That doesn't mean I won't necessarily have to deal with immaturity and childish, because I can guarantee you it's going to go on in every single workplace you go to. Whether you're talking about the highest corridors of power or you're talking about just a lowly assembly job like what I have, it's all childishness and immaturity. You think at some time people would grow out of that. But at least, at the very least, I have the potential to break out of the lower end 9-to-5 type of stuff. And quite frankly, most of the people who I work with, that's going to be their job for the rest of their lives. Or that is those kind of jobs. They're never going to have anything greater than what they have right now. They're never going to be anything more than what they are right now, period. Doing a radio show like this, that's something they couldn't even comprehend. That's something that never even crosses their mind, because all of their life is work and their little social stuff and perhaps church. And that's it. There is nothing else. Among science fiction fans, the term for those is mundanes, people with absolutely no imagination, absolutely none. And we have a collection of older women who are very comfortable with what they're doing and have their own little caffe clutch go in there. And some young punks who go in and feel like they can play the same kind of high school games. And the truth of the matter is they can play the same kind of high school games, because that sort of atmosphere is encouraged. And it's just a difficult situation for people like myself. Bichon told me that, you know, I should just go in and keep my mouth shut and be a robot. And that's all fine and good to a certain extent, but I'm not emotionally capable of just being like that all the time. You know, I can't just shut myself off, especially if people are attempting to engage me in conversation. It's rude, I think, first of all, to deny it. And I had a situation where I had a kid who just kept pestering me and pestering me and pestering me. And finally, I said, look, will you just leave me the hell alone? You know, it stops being conversation and it starts to be harassment. And you just get sick of it. You get sick of the childishness. You get sick of the immaturity. You get sick of the stupidity. And maybe one day I can break out of it. I might have just walked off the job if I didn't need the money so damn much. If I didn't need to be working so much. And looking for work is even more of a pain in the ass now, especially in the Bush economy. I mean, I could walk off the job and not get another one for a year. It's certainly possible. And quite frankly, I'm not sure it isn't going to happen again at the next job. So, you know, it's just a question of, you know, sticking with what I'm doing. Until something better comes along, and hopefully something better will come along. But it just upsets me to be treated that way, because I frankly think I deserve a little better. And to me, it's a symptom of how big a failure my life is and how big a failure I am that these sort of things keep happening. Anyway, let's take a little break. We're going to hear some news from my friends at BuzzFlash.com. And we got some other interesting stuff going on this show. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. If you live in a small town, you're pretty dependent upon the people in your community. So you learn pretty quickly who keeps his word, who accomplishes what they say they'll accomplish, and who pays off their debts. And you learn to keep away from liars, slackers, and bums. That's why it's a mystery that a lot of rural voters are expected to vote for Bush, when it's obvious they wouldn't want this guy as a member of their community. He doesn't keep his word, he doesn't deliver on what he says or his goals, and he keeps running up a record debt. Take Bush's promise to extend a modest ban on assault weapons. In 2000, when he was trying to get the women's vote and the law enforcement vote, Bush said he would support the ban on military-style weapons and the legislation aimed at protecting civilians and police officers. But come September 13, 2004, when the legislation was set to expire, Bush didn't lift a finger to get Tom DeLay, an NRA officer and lapdog, to bring up the bill in the House of Representatives. Let's not forget that Osama bin Laden told al-Qaeda members to go to the United States to buy weapons because it was so easy to get them here. Bush, when given the opportunity to do something right in his war on terror, did the wrong thing again. A number of state groups working to reduce gun violence got nearly 2,000 small-town and big-town police chiefs to sign a request not only to renew but to strengthen the assault weapons legislation to make it a true ban. But Bush didn't care. He needs the NRA this year more than he needs women and police officers, and he's willing to make life a lot more dangerous for all of us just to get their vote. As Clinton said at the Democratic convention, Bush is cutting back on the number of law enforcement officers, but putting more assault weapons on the street. So, the question to ask Bush's rural voters: if your neighbor, your mayor, or your president lies to you and proves to be a fraud and a hypocrite, why would you trust them again? Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
Thank you. All right. What else is in the news?
Here's a little bit of the George Bush campaign ads that hit the airwaves yesterday. D5.
Pro-entrepreneur agenda.
Some challenges we've seen before.
Is that where they have all the 9/11 footage?
Yeah.
He completely, right out of the box, he buffooned himself right into a mess. Imagine using 9/11 footage. Promote yourself. I mean, can you imagine if I put out a TV commercial with 9/11 footage and told you to listen to my show and said I was a great American?
This is why you should listen to me.
On the hallowed ground where people died, we are hardworking firemen who are 10 times braver than George W. Bush.
Yeah.
He puts the firemen
standing on top of the rubble.
Yeah. George W. Bush was around a lot of really brave people when this happened. Can you imagine the
nerve?
He
came and visited the brave people.
He visited brave people. That's what he's promoting.
And some were like no others.
Boy, that ad's going to be pulled. All right, let's start it again.
Some challenges we've seen before. And some were like no others. But America rose to the challenge. What sees us through tough times?
Let me ask you something. Do you think Bush would be brave enough to run into a burning building and help someone?
No.
I know I'm not. I know he isn't. Mr. X is, but not... Mr. George Bush, President Bush personally watched the attacks on TV. President Bush, as soon as the attacks happened, was in a plane hiding somewhere. And then...
He flew around until he knew it was safe.
Now we're going to show you some footage of him hanging around with some really brave firemen to make you think that he's brave. I mean, that's insane. I mean, I'm not even... Who are his people? I mean, they must have shown it to Bush before they put it on TV, no? Or do they just put it out there?
I'm sure he saw this. They thought it was a good idea.
I like it. It makes me look brave.
Freedom, faith, families,
faith.
And sacrifice.
Faith.
What's that about?
Wasn't Bush the guy who said we're on a crusade?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then they told him you better not say crusade.
Yeah. That's the religious thing.
President Bush, steady leadership in times of change.
I just remember Bush rushing bin Laden's family out of the country so they wouldn't get hurt.
Hmm. What was that about?
George Bush hates fags. George Bush thinks if a fag gets married, it's going to ruin your life. It's going to impact you really,
your
really.
Your marriage won't mean anything.
Yeah, your marriage will be... Your marriage is a joke if those fags get married. Represent President Bush's campaign to get reelected to the highest office in the land. If you're a queer and you're watching this, please turn it off. You are hated by us. George Bush hasn't done cocaine for a long, long time and hasn't crashed his car into bushes and drove drunk for a really long time.
The president stopped partying at 40.
And found Jesus. The president had, like, tons of fun for 40 years and then found Jesus and decided to clean up his act. Shouldn't you clean up your act? We are CREEP, Committee to Re-elect the President.
There we go.
George Bush will protect you from a black woman's nipple being seen during the Super Bowl because you can't handle it. And Jesus would have wanted it that way. Get him out of here.
George Bush was asleep during the dirty halftime show at the Super Bowl.
George Bush hasn't read the newspaper since 1954. Can't find Bin Laden, but he will destroy Howard Stern and get him off the radio.
Here's a little number I wrote the other day while out duck hunting with a judge.
Quack.
Fuck you very much, the FCC. Fuck you very much for fining me. $5,000 a fuck, so I'm really out of luck. That's more than Heidi Fleiss was charging me. So fuck you very much, the FCC, for proving that free speech just isn't free. Clear Channel's a dear channel, so Howard Stern must go. Attorney General Ashcroft doesn't like strong words, and so he's charging twice as much as all the drugs for Rush Limbaugh. So fuck you all so very much. So fuck you very much, dear Mr. Bush, for heroically sitting on your tush. For Halliburton, Enron, all the companies who fail, let's send them a clear signal and stick Martha straight in jail. She's an uppity rich bitch, and at least she isn't male. So fuck you all so very much. So fuck you, dickhead Mr. Cheney too. Fuck you and fuck everything you do. Your pacemaker must be a fake, you haven't got a heart. As far as I'm concerned, you're just a pasty-faced old fart. And as for Condoleezza, she's an intellectual tart. So fuck you all so very much. So fuck you very much, the EPA, for giving all Alaska's oil away. It really is a bummer when I can't fill my Hummer. The ozone's a no-go zone now that Arnold's here to say
the nuclear winter games are going to take place in L.A.
So fuck you all so very much. So what, the planet fails? Let's save the great white males. And fuck you all so very much.
Eric Idle, Monty Python alum with Fuck You All So Very Much. A real nice little song there expressing my feelings, and I'm sure a lot of your feelings out there as well. Before that, we had Howard Stern talking about, and this was a while ago. This was when Bush came out with his first campaign commercial that really took advantage of 9/11. Before I continue on, I got to apologize for the last segment. There was a buzz in there. I wasn't aware of it, and I found out why that happened after the fact. So if you heard a little buzzing in the background, I apologize. I was not going to re-record everything I had just recorded to get that buzzing back. We are back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, for now anyway, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. And we've been talking about, stuff at my work. And, of course, there's a lot of issues going on in the world right now, certainly in American politics, with the election hitting the stretch run here. We've only got a couple of months left before the so-called election. And, there's going to be so much fraud in this thing, and it's going to be so whacked out that it's not even worried about. I'm not even worried about what's going to happen one way or the other, because in my humble opinion, this country is due for a fucking smackdown. We really are, because, you know, you talk about red states and blue states, really red people and blue people in that sense. The red people are the Aryan, racist, you know, the evil part of us, really. And not evil in the sense of satanic or demonic or occult or anything, but just self-centered, and greedy and racist and exclusionary, xenophobic, myopic, you know, short-sighted and not inclusive, people who just want to exclude everybody else, you know. Those are the people who are voting Republican. You know, I've usually said that there are two types of people that vote Republican: the people who are in on the scam, and the people who aren't aware of the scam. And that's really what this is all about. And really, it's not a 50-50 split. There's really much more people in this country who believe in the liberal way of doing things, and that is, you know, government having its place and business having its place. And I believe that very strongly. I mean, I'm not anti-business. I'm anti-business corruption, just as I am anti-government corruption. You have to fight them both, really. But it takes a strong balance for that. But there's a lot of people out there who view the government, that everything that they do is evil, and that everything that business does is above the board. And there are people on the left who feel the exact opposite, and they're both wrong. That's why I call myself a member of the radical middle. And in future weeks, now we had three people on last show, and in upcoming shows we're going to have other interviews, and I'm going to be speaking probably next show, maybe next Sunday show, with Mark Crispin Miller, who wrote a book, A Cruel and Unusual, about the Bush administration's policies. And we're going to have a very good conversation about that, I'm sure, because he raises a lot of good points in that book. Even though it's stuff that I already knew and stuff anybody listening to the show already knows, I like the spin he puts on it, for lack of a better term. The big story this last week was the documents that CBS brought out in 60 Minutes last week that showed that George W. Bush was given a direct order to report for a physical and did not do that. And disobeying a direct order, you know, is a court-martial offense in the military, especially if you're talking about an officer. I mean, you could probably get away with it more if you're a private. They'll just discharge your ass, but you can get in a lot more trouble with it if you're an officer, because officers are supposed to be the ones setting the example. Is that right, honey? Yeah, my wife is shaking her head in agreement. She's awake now, ladies and gentlemen. She's getting back to her little stitchery there, and she's sucking on a banana pop right now. Is that a banana pop, or is that one of your fruit pops? It's one of the fruit pops. I got her some. Well, we have to watch the sweets and stuff like that, but the fruit pops are not particularly sugary. So, and besides that, we're entitled. Yeah, we haven't had really whole much to eat today because I've been busy and she's been asleep. So, but that was the big news story was those documents. And immediately, and you get to see what is called the Mighty Wurlitzer in action there. A right-wing blogger apparently tried to recreate documents on Word, and said these documents were forgeries that were created on Microsoft Word because proportional fonts hadn't been invented, which, of course, was bullshit. Proportional fonts were around in the 60s and early 70s on IBM typewriters, which were the primary type of typewriters that would have been used to write these documents. And certainly not Word, because Word wasn't around. But the IBM typewriter was certainly capable of it. But the point of the matter is, CBS got put on the defensive. This is 60 Minutes, which is one of the most popular news shows in history. In fact, one of the most popular television shows on a regular basis in history. And they are having their credibility attacked because of it. And really all because a right-wing blogger decided to do this. And once he posted on Free Republic, it started to get out. And they said, honey, are you settling down there? Can you settle down, please? She's making a lot of noise over there. I don't know if you all can hear it, but it's very distracting. And I'm sorry. I know you're sorry. You know, it's just these little personal touches that make this little radio show such a wonderful thing. You don't see the black girl on Howard Stern making, making a big fuss while he's talking, do you? No, she doesn't do that. But I don't have a producer. I've got a wife who sits there and does knitting. She got this wolf pattern there. What the hell was I talking about? Yeah, CBS and 60 Minutes in particular is one of the has some of the best reputation in the country as far as journalism concerned, and now they are being painted as, you know, being, you know, showing forged documents. And of course, they weren't forged documents. It was all horse shit. But it just goes to show how the Mighty Wurlitzer, as it's called, is going. And the Mighty Wurlitzer is the big media machine, because as soon as it got out on Free Republic, and as soon as it got out to other outlets, they started carping on it and carping on it and carping on it. And it really should never have gotten that far. People with legitimate journalistic credentials should have stomped on that right away and said, no, these are not forgeries. And CBS is sticking by its story, but they have been painted by it. And Digby on Hullabaloo, Digby's blog.blogspot.com. It's on my it's on the website. By the way, the URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email is joevec@bellsouth.net. But if you go on there, if you go on the site and you look at regular reads, Hullabaloo is up there, and that's the one I got this from. And they were talking about he was talking about this very thing about how, you know, CBS is being played as like there's supposedly some sort of partisan news organization. And Digby says, I can't help wondering why this orgy of recriminations is happening over this particular incident when there have been literally thousands of even worse examples of the press willingly acting as a partisan tool for over the past 12 years, much of it fed to them directly by political operatives. Why is the thought of Dan Rather being used for partisan political purposes, if indeed he was, so shocking when we know that the mainstream press has been the victim of hoax after hoax after hoax by such outfits as Citizens United for years? Did anyone ever call Jeff Gerth on the carpet for falling for the SCAFE-financed Arkansas Project propaganda in the New York Times Whitewater stories? What about the Chinese espionage scandal, which was also a right-wing hat job, that proved to be absolutely bogus and aided and abetted by our good friend Representative Chris Cox and his wholly discredited Cox Report? Did anyone pay a price for pimping the Viz Foster story for the mighty Wurlitzer? Troopergate? The White House vandalism and stolen gift stories? The list is endless. Years and years and years of hoaxes and smears and lies that led to tens of millions of dollars in taxpayer money wasted on investigations that went nowhere, and nobody says a fucking word about the press's incestuous involvement with those who perpetrated these expensive frauds on the American public. And Digby points out he won't even mention the huge elephant sitting in the middle of the room with the words Saddam and 9/11 tattooed on his forehead. You know, at least half of the country still believes that Saddam Hussein had direct activity, had direct involvement with 9/11, which is horseshit. He had no involvement in it. The lesson in this is clear, Digby says. Dan Rather made a big mistake, all right, but it wasn't the one that the rest of the press corps is continuously wringing its hand over. The lesson is that he should never have shown the documents. He should have done the story with some guy in the shadows with his voice disguised saying that he'd seen the documents. He should have hinted darkly at the death threats and used many anonymous sources without ever producing any kind of proof. He should have dribbled the story out over a couple of weeks on the CBS Evening News rather than presenting it all at one time. Oh yes, and he should never have done the story about a Democrat. Nobody ever gets in trouble for committing journalistic malpractice against them. In fact, it's a career booster. And this is why we're having problems in this country. And I'll say this again, and I have said this before. At Nuremberg, when we put the Germans on trial, the Nazis on trial, we didn't just put the Nazi leadership on trial. They were first and foremost. But we also put the German journalists, the German media machine. We put them on trial, too. Now, you know, everybody plays political games from time to time, and we all know that some newspapers are more partisan than others. Of course, to a conservative Republican, any newspaper that doesn't say exactly what they want them to say is a liberal, commie, whatever they want to call them. You know, and we all know that that sort of thing kind of sort of goes on, and people who read the news regularly or watch news on television regularly get a kind of understanding that this sort of things happens. But since 9/11 especially, when you pass the point where you're just blindly accepting everything one group says, in this case the Republican leadership and the right wing's mighty Wurlitzer, and make anybody who says otherwise seem like a traitor. Look at how they treated Scott Ritter, the UN arms inspector. Then they stop being neutral observers and they become active participants. Which is what they are, active participants. And if it ever gets to the point where Bush and his people get put on trial for this, if it ever gets that far. And quite frankly, I'm very skeptical of that, because I think it's going to be 30 years before we get rid of these sons of bitches. If it ever gets that far, then these people have to be put on trial too. They are complicit in what's going on. And it's easy for me to sit here and get angry about it. And getting angry accomplishes nothing. Because there's nothing I can fucking do about it. Except bring it up to you all out there. And for the most part, the people who are listening are people who agree with me. Except for some of the trolls that listen in for the sole purpose of being able to roll their eyes. Oh, you're such lying. In the meantime, you don't realize that you're the one that's being lied to. Not by me. I don't have a reason to lie to you. But the Republicans sure do. Because it makes it easier for you to vote for them. And I've mentioned this before. It's like a cult mentality. After a while, you simply get to the point where you simply have to believe everything they say, because to think otherwise means that you have just lost all sense of reality and that you've allowed yourself to be suckered in so much you can't face yourselves. And the realization may or may not ever sink in. Another thing we did after World War II is we took regular German citizens and we showed them the mass graves. And some of them claimed that they didn't know what was going on. And others still tried to hide the fact. But they were complicit in their own way. For not fighting back. Or for joining in. Or for just believing that everything was okay. I remember reading, I forget who wrote it. It was a story about how outside of the concentration camps, there were constantly ashes falling, or quite often there were ashes falling. And these were ashes that were human remains, basically. And the people who lived around the camps would have to go out and dust off their cars or whatnot outside of this ash that was continuously falling, or at least falling for enough length of time for it to accumulate. And they wouldn't deny that anything was going on, but every morning they still went off and swept up those ashes, right? Time for a break. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
Hi, kids. George Lowe, voice of TV's beloved Space Ghost. You are barking a happy tune with my close personal friend, the lovely Joe Vecchio, on the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
I believe in America. America made my fortune. Don Corleone. Without you, I wouldn't be where I am today. We have a little problem in the Caribbean. And you guys are pretty good at blowing heads off, so I was wondering if you could help us out. Why didn't you go to the CIA? Why didn't you come to me first?
I think we should have the mafia run this country. Then nobody would fuck with us. If we had a mob president, right? And Hussein starts acting up. The mafia president calls him up and says, look, either you're out by noon tomorrow, I'll put a bullet in your kid's head. All right? Thank you very much. Any other business? Let's play some golf. All right? Hey. Had a little trouble on a back nine yesterday. You know what I mean? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands. Give us this day our daily bread in the rocket's red glare, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. I want to thank Don Washington,
Don Jefferson and Don Adams for making this country possible. Unfortunately, they couldn't be with us here tonight because they're indisposed. Ah! I understand they're making a sequel to The Godfather. It's pissing me off, all right? You're stretching the story a little thin.
Godfather 4 is being made now. It's called The Ghost of Don Corleone. Can you imagine that picture?
Boo! Ooh! 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 Michael, come in. Boo! Ooh!
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.com. .net. As I speak, it is Sunday evening, September the 19th, about 10:08 p.m. at the big clock on the wall of the wonderful Jove Enterprises studio. And in case you're wondering, yes, Jove Enterprises Incorporated is an official business. We are incorporated in the state of Georgia. We don't really do anything with the business except have the name. We haven't really done anything to make money off it. It was originally created so that I can run some science fiction conventions. And I had a plan, or at least I had the beginnings of a plan, to do science fiction conventions for profit and put together decent shows in three or four different towns, kind of like what Vulcan does, except run a small profit on each one of them. And it really can be done, but the hard part is getting started, because science fiction fans will not support a convention unless they know there's one that's going to be there on a regular basis, which is kind of stupid because it's through its first couple of years of inception that conventions need the business more. Had I been able to get a business loan, a very small business loan, about $50,000, I would have been able to continue that and might actually be doing that for a living today rather than dealing with all the bullshit I'm dealing with at my current job. And, you know, I was thinking about why it was that my current job is so disorganized and why the things that happen at that plant happen. And I have a coworker, a very nice guy. He works in the maintenance department. And I give him a ride home every night. I don't have to. I offered it to him because I found out he wasn't getting a ride. He's a fellow Air Force veteran, although much older than me. I believe he served in either the Gulf War or in Vietnam or someplace, but he has a second job at the VA hospital, too. But he's a nice enough guy. And I gave him a lift home every night. When I didn't have a car, another guy gave me a lift home. So this is my way of returning that favor. Because, you know, I like to do things for people. But I was discussing the situation with him. And he says that he believes that the shop where I work, the Tucker branch of Siemens Energy and Automation, is just nothing but a tax write-off. Which is why we have so many minorities working there. But I would say about 90% of the shop that I work at is black, which I don't necessarily have a problem with, of course. In fact, generally speaking, I get along with black people better than I get along with white people. White people are extremely racist, much more racist than black people are. Although black people have shades of it, they recognize at least when somebody is speaking honestly about racial issues. And I always speak honestly about it. I understand that, you know, there's a lot of racism among white people, and I hear it because, you know, being white, I'm privy to the occasional conversation before they understand who I am and how I think, that, that they just assume that I think like them, but I don't think like them. And, you know, while there are some black people who are racist against whites, I'm not going to deny that. For the most part, if you deal with the issue honestly, they will listen to you. And you can even get comfortable enough to use the N-word around them in a social context. And, you know, there's that whole thing about anybody who uses the N-word who's not a black person is automatically a racist. I don't think that's necessarily true. There is such a thing as context in that sense. But at any rate, you know, the point that he made was that the reason why there are so many minorities, and especially so many minority women who fulfill, you know, two categories of whatever kind of quota system you want to call it, is that that's why they're there. I mean, it doesn't really matter too much if they're profitable. It helps if they are, but if they're not, it doesn't matter. They can write it off as taxes. They hire a lot of black people, and that makes them look good for the government. Siemens is a German company that has many plants all over the world, a lot of plants here in America. They do a lot of very different things, and really this is just – this really – and it might be true. They really just might be a place where they're just doing this so that they can look good for the government as far as getting, you know, a lot of black people hired and stuff like that. And they pay a decent wage. And I've never seen a plant that had so many black people working there. I mean, yeah, there's always at least a good mix in pretty much all the companies I've worked for. Although, for the most part, most of the companies I've worked for, the management is white. And, in fact, the upper management is white here. They have black supervisors. My immediate supervisor, the guy who talked to me, he's black. And, in fact, all of the middle-level supervisors that I've seen are black, with one exception that I'm aware of, who is a white guy. But mostly it's black people. But the upper management is mostly white, which shouldn't surprise anybody. But it was interesting to me, thinking about what he said and how he said it, that, you know, people understand this, that it's just a tax write-off. Or it just never occurred to me before, thinking along those lines. Because, you know, if anybody who's worked around me knows, I take my work very seriously. I don't take my job seriously. But I do take my work seriously, and I can't figure out how in the world they make a profit in this place, you know, as disorganized as they are, and especially as, you know, as much as they hate to hear about new ideas or different ways of doing things. They really don't care to make a profit, and that's the consensus that I've gotten just looking at it. They can't possibly want to make a profit on this mess. And that's why they don't like troublemakers such as myself, because, you know, I'll come in here and I say, well, this ought to be this way and this ought to be that way, because that's the way I see things. It's very interesting. And if I'm still working over the next week, I think I'll have a broader understanding of it. But I'm going to get out of the area that I'm working in. I can't deal with all this gossip bullshit. I hate gossip at work. I hate that stuff. I hate all the childishness about it. It's just annoying, and it gets in the way of just having a good, decent time at work. There's no law in the world that says you have to be miserable working. Some people seem to think that, and I had that screed about people who hate people, other people being happy. But you know, I just can't stand all that gossip. Anyway, where the heck was I? What have I got? 11 minutes to kill here. You know, it's hard doing the show by myself. I need somebody to talk to from time to time. If anybody lives out in the Atlanta area, and they want to come on the show from time to time, help me out, give me an email, joevec@bellsouth.net. I was reading New York Times today, and they had a column by Henry Louis Gates Jr., who is a guest, they just mentioned he's a guest columnist. I'm not really sure what he does. He's a Harvard alum, I guess. And he talks about how the Republicans are talking about trying to get more black people voting. But if they do that, that means they'll lose more white votes. To quote, let's see, who is this guy? Michael Dawson, who is a Harvard colleague of Mr. Gates, who is, let's see, according to this, my Harvard colleague, Michael Dawson, a descendant of a black Democratic congressman from Chicago, agrees with Karl Rove, George Bush's political advisor, that black people are socially conservative, but the issue they vote on are racial and especially economic. Dawson went on to say that the Republicans would lose more white votes than they would gain black votes. And this is interesting, and it really just goes to show that the Republicans are now the Dixiecrats, and they're run by basically Dixiecrats. And for those of you who aren't aware of this, Dixiecrats were highly racial Democrats in the 60s. They were still Democratic, And they were, in fact, part of the power base of the Democrats from 1932 through the 1960s, up until Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act. In fact, Lyndon Johnson was said to remark that they just turned over the South to Republican control. And Dixiecrats will vote for anybody who's anti-black. They're big believers in the Confederate flag. They're big believers in all that. It's a bunch of racist scumbags, to be perfectly honest. And now they pretty much run the Republican Party. You look at all the leaders of the Republicans. You're not seeing very many Northeasterners there. You're talking almost totally Southerners. Trent Lott, Tom DeLay, George Bush, Dick Cheney. Well, Dick Cheney's more of a Westerner than a Southerner, but you know, he's certainly not one of the old-style Northeastern Republicans like the Rockefellers and stuff like that, the moderate Republicans who the current batch despises because they were such a bunch of losers. And it's because of their stranglehold on the South that makes the Republican Party the powerhouse that it is now. And that's really the truth of it. And the Republicans will talk about getting black votes. They'll talk about trying to have a big tent. But the fact of the matter is, for the most part, black people ain't buying it. Black people ain't buying it. According to the article, I liked what the guy said here. He said that the black people are gagging on the donkey, but they're not quite ready to swallow the elephant. In fact, that's a quote from President Bush. And in fact, he uses the derogatory term of the Democratic Party. He calls it the Democrat Party. When someone says the Democrat Party, you know they're a Dixiecrat, because Democrat Party is an insult, the way they say that. The correct term is Democratic Party. You can call someone a Democrat, he is a Democrat, but when you're talking about the party, you have to say the Democratic Party. If you say the Democrat Party, to me, that means you know and understand that it's a racial thing, and it's an insult thing, the Democrat Party. And it is seemingly true. Well, not seemingly true, it is true. The Republicans are the party of racists. That's what the R stands for, ladies and gentlemen. Racist, not Republican. Because that's what they are. And the Southern strategy for the Republicans worked. But you know what? In the long run, it's going to cost them. Because there is a price to pay for including these racist hate mongers in your party. There is a price to pay for it. The Democrats paid the price for a very, very long time. It was their cross to bear. But because they had the Dixiecrats. I mean, Strom Thurmond started out as a Democrat. And he ran for president, as a matter of fact, on the Dixiecrat Party. Look at what happened here in Georgia for the governorship in the last election for the governor. Where Roy Barnes, who admittedly had done some political stuff that had pissed people off, but the main reason why people voted in Sonny Perdue was because he promised that he would get the Confederate symbol black back on our flag. That was the only, for some people, with all the serious, important issues that are happening in Georgia, this was the one issue that was of most importance to them. Putting on that fucking racist symbol back on the state flag. And they cynically listened to Sonny Perdue when he said he would do that, and he cynically manipulated them by not really going out and do it. Because he understands that if they put that symbol back on the flag, that Georgia would lose a lot of business and it would mean a lot less money in his pocket. And these dumbasses who voted him in now realize they're stuck with a governor who suckered them. And that the odds are that unless there's a violent revolution somehow, that they're not going to get their flag back. Now, granted, no one's stopping them from flying it on their lawn if they want to fly the Confederate battle symbol. If they want to fly the stars and bars, no one's stopping them. They got a right to express their opinion in that center, and I got a right to call them a bunch of racist scumbags. It's that second part that they don't understand. They think that they're the only ones who have a right to express their opinion. It's just sad that people do that. And it's a human nature thing, because it's not just American Southerners against black people. It's Pashtuns against Sunnis, against Shiites. It's Muslims versus Christians in Eastern Europe. It's anti-Semitism anywhere you go. It's Jewish hatred of Palestinians that makes them do things that they really shouldn't be doing. You know, it's gender hatred. It's men who hate women and women who hate men. It's all over. It's just human nature. President Clinton talks about this a lot. There's always them and us. And if you look at the history of civilization, it's slowly but surely increasing the amount of people who are us and decreasing the amount of people who are them. In other words, including more people. Some people think that you can deal with them by simply killing them all, but you can't kill them all. You simply cannot kill them all. There was an Israeli Secret Service guy who talked about the things that they did to the Palestinians. He said, but there were lines that they simply did not cross because they understood that in the long term, in the future, they're going to have to live with these people. And therefore, they didn't cross those lines. We crossed those lines in Iraq with the torture at the Abu Ghraib prisons. Now, the trolls that listen on my board, that listen to the show and who comment on my board, they don't understand that. To them, they're just untermenschen, under people. Inferior. Not even really regarded as human. That's all they are. And therefore, since they're not really human, we can feel free to do anything to them and take away their rights. A lot of white people in this country feel the same way about blacks. A lot of Muslims feel the same way about Christians. You know, why do you think a guy can fly an airplane into a building? Because he assumes that the people who are in the building aren't human themselves. Therefore, it's not a sin to kill them. He's doing it for God. And it's an attitude that's spread throughout the entire human race. And sooner or later, we're going to either have to stop that, and we're going to have to stop crossing these lines, or we're just going to kill each other. And that's really what it comes down to. Because you can't live in a world constantly where you have an enemy that you're always fighting. No one wants to live like that forever. Yeah, you can keep the anger up for a short time, a few years maybe, a couple of decades. You can even keep it up for centuries. I mean, the Crusades happened over centuries. The Inquisition, that happened over a period of time. You can keep it up, but it can't last forever. Unless you're perfectly willing to kill them all, and you can't kill them all. And that's really the crux of all the problems that we're having today. We either learn to live with each other, or we learn to kill each other. And even when you're talking about the stupid little gossip that goes on in the workplace, where some people are welcome and others aren't, that's a small scale. And then you have the big scale where people try to wipe out entire races. Or sometimes people are just in the way, and the Iraqi people were just in the way. It wasn't just about oil, and oil was part of it, but it was also about just strategic planning in that area. They wanted to have a military base in Iraq so that they can start launching their attacks on Iran and on Syria. Because, you know, when Bush gets another 4 years, and there's no doubt in my mind he's going to get in again, they're going to go after Iran and they're going to go after Syria because they want to control that area of the world. It's tactics, strategy, it's policy. But it ain't going to work. They've been building this base in Iraq, but they ain't going to get it because the people are rising up against them. We've lost the war in Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. I don't care what anybody says. You can keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing, but we have lost that war. We lost it the second we got in there and didn't do anything really to help the Iraqi people. Anyway, that's about it for the show tonight. I see by the clock on the wall that we're just about finished. So let me say goodbye. This is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe radio show. And again, the blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com. And the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. This is Joe Vecchio saying goodbye. Goodbye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe radio show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.